The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost. MyBills.ie. Help save time with bill payment online for free. Unpost. Do more.
Welcome back to the programme. And now we are going to New York. And we are going to Neil O'Dowd, who is the founder of IrishCentral.com and publisher of a number of American papers. Banach thí na féile leat, Neil. Anyway, I wanted to talk to you about a number of things. You're writing yourself that the prohibition on public displays of gay pride at New York St. Patrick's Day parade could ultimately destroy the parade itself.
Yes, Marion, it's certainly looking like in the last 48 hours there's been major developments in terms of corporate sponsorships of both the Boston and New York parade. In New York, Heineken have pulled out of the parade as a major sponsor. And in Boston, Sam Adams Beer, Gillette and Westin Hotels have announced their withdrawing. So what this means effectively is that the GLAA, the GLAD, which is the gay lobbying group, has been circulating a letter to all the major advertisers and backers of these parades, asking that they withdraw their support, and they're getting a very strong and positive reaction. What this means, of course, in the long run is that, you know, this is very bad news for the parade organisers who continue to bar these groups, because if you look at New York, for instance, if, for instance, NBC, which carries the parade live and which pays a very handsome fee to the parade, if they're approached, obviously it won't happen this year, but next year it could have a devastating financial impact. Plus, in New York, you have the fact of quite hostile mayor who has made it clear that next year he will use a lot of procedures such as shortening the route, causing problems with permits. So it really is coming down to what has been obvious to a lot of us, that the tide is very much in favour of the LGBT groups. And the parades need to find a way to take care of this issue very quickly.
I remember doing it on another programme, a big long thing about this before, and learned that the parade is, as it were, owned by the Ancient Order of Hibernians. I would have presumed it was owned by New Yorkers or Bostonians, but that they had found it. Sorry, Larry,
Just one point about the Boston Parade. And people might be surprised to learn this, but the Boston Parade is not in Boston City Center. It was always a neighborhood event in South Boston. And it's actually the group that is in charge of it is the Allied War Veterans. And the South Boston Parade is actually just as much a tribute to American military veterans as it is to St. Patrick's Day.
All right. And the one in New York, Neil?
It's not actually run by the AOH.
Is it not?
A number of years ago, because of legal proceedings against the parade, the AOH withdrew from it, and it's run by the New York City Parade Committee.
All right.
Which is a fairly mysterious group in many ways, but they're certainly one that does not seem to be responsive to what's staring them in the face at this point, Marion.
It's interesting, you know, that they were pressurised in terms of principle for years, but it looks like the dollar might sort it.
Well, you know, the oldest rule that Larry would know about American politics is follow the money. And clearly, you know, I have been dealing over the weekend with queries from lots of companies wondering what the best tactic is in terms of how this is being done. I mean, the reality is that the parade in New York has become a huge issue again after 12 years of Mayor Bloomberg, who handled the issue very differently.
How did he handle it?
Well, how he handled it was he essentially marched in the gay Irish parade, which takes place a couple of weeks before the St. Patrick's Parade. It's called the St. Patrick's Parade for All. And that, in a sense, inoculated him. And he understood, I think, that ethnic and gender tensions are always near the surface in New York, and it's not necessarily a good idea, you know, to spark them. If you look at how the Boston mayor has done this, he's done a superb job. He put the two sides together. He came very close to a deal. He's quoted in the Boston Globe today as saying that he will have a deal on this parade in Boston before the end of his first term. I think he'll have it by next year. Whereas in New York, de Blasio just kind of went right into it, did not try and bring the parties together, which is a source of some resentment in the Irish community, that he just kind of picked this issue, as he did the carriage horses, which is also a very large Irish employer. So I think if you look at a tale of two mayors, the Boston mayor gets very high marks. The New York mayor probably not so much.
Yeah, I mean, Neil's written incisively on this a couple of times, and I think it really is a tribute to our new Boston mayor, who all of us who are Bostonians and all of us with Galway ties are very proud of, Marty Walsh. But I think it's two leadership styles, a constructive leadership style versus a more abrasive and leadership style that Bill de Blasio has shown on this. And I do wonder, not being a New Yorker, I do wonder, however, how much of this is down to the fact that the Irish-American community was very much with Christine Quinn in the mayoral race, not with Bill de Blasio. And I wonder how much of this is a little bit of political payback.
Neil?
I think a lot of it is the answer, Larry. We're definitely not feeling the love from Mayor de Blasio. And in fact, I think the New York Times is doing a major story on this tomorrow. Since he came in, you're absolutely right. There's a sense that he has to win every argument. And, for instance, he cancelled the St. Patrick's breakfast, now has decided at the last minute to run it again. But that was an event that was very much treasured by ordinary Irish Americans, where the one day in the year they would get to go to Gracie Mansion and meet the mayor. And it was not in any way a political event. It was one for a community. And I think he's kind of forgotten that while he won, you know, running to the left, he is the mayor of all New Yorkers. And I think there's a lot of resentment out there because of the way he's conducted himself.
The talking about Brexit, so you think that more people will withdraw sponsorship? That'll sort it, won't it?
I would think that economically, you know, particularly, I think the Boston Parade will be sorted by Marty Walsh. I think he's done a great job.
And if he was close to it, what went wrong?
I think that the gay groups overstepped the mark. I think he had a deal. It wasn't 100% for anyone. It was a middle of the road where 70-30, the gays had won the argument, but they weren't going to be allowed to use particularly particular type of banners. They could use the banners of their organisation,
right?
But not the gay pride banners. And, you know, this was how the Israeli parade was sorted. They had the same problem in New York. And first of all, they started marching, and now they carry their banners. And I think that, you know, Walsh came very close. He got the parade committee to agree
Larry?
To have fans that could march.
Yeah, I mean, that was the Neil has pretty much stated accurate. I mean, the bottom line was the compromise that was reached was that the mass equality banner was going to be used, and as Marty Walsh said at the time, everyone knows mass equality is LGBT advocacy group. They favor same-sex marriage, etc. Everyone knows what it stood for, and mass equality initially was very receptive and said, yes, we're there. This is a compromise, but we're there. And I think, largely due to pressure from national groups, they started to feel the heat nationally that this was not a step far enough, and they backed down from an earlier statement they had made agreeing to participate. But I think Neil is right. I think that as you said, follow the money. I think within a year, I think next year, I think we're going to see a different arrangement. And just one quick thing about the Boston Parade I can speak to. In many ways, this is about a changed neighborhood, South Boston, which is Irish. A lot of Irish people are very familiar with. It's not the South Boston that we might have used to know. It's a very gentrified area. It's very different. And the parade organizers, I think, to some extent, what this is about is they're holding on to the last vestiges of the old Southie. You can have our neighborhood, but you can't have our parade. There's a little element of that that's there. But I think, again, follow the money. I think next year this will be sorted.
Okay. Can I ask you on a couple of other issues, Neil? Why are we no ambassador, would you think, at the moment?
Well, you know, I addressed this very question to Obama's chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, at the White House on a couple of nights ago when the Taoiseach was there. And he really honestly did not have an answer. What's clear is that the background checks on at least two people came back faulty, and the people concerned were forced to withdraw. But it really is seen as a bit of a slight on the Irish-American community, and indeed on Ireland, that 15 months after Dan Rooney departed, it hasn't been possible to appoint an ambassador. Now, Dennis McDonagh did say that an appointment is imminent, and some people have even predicted it will be Monday. But I think that's probably too soon. But the rumor going around is that it's somebody from Chicago. I don't know the name, and I certainly have not any direct evidence of who it is. But it certainly seems to be an oversight, and a bad oversight. But it's kind of typical of the Obama administration that they don't take care of the little things like preparing for healthcare rollouts or where the ambassador is, and then they get shocked when people are surprised and say, you know, not since 1927 has Ireland waited this long for an ambassador.
Do you think it's of great significance, or is it?
I actually think it is, yeah. I think when you talk about issues like multinationals and issues of taxation and all that, to have a friend at court in the White House is extremely important. Issues like immigration reform, issues like the $20 billion in trade between Ireland and America, even issues like visas where, you know, particular issues arise with bureaucracy in the U.S. consul, in the U.S. embassy, where an ambassador can intervene. You think back on Jean Kennedy Smith, who played an overwhelming role in the peace process. Mm-hmm. Even think back on George Bush's ambassadors, Mr. Kenny and people like that, who were very good. It is important to have an ambassador. And you can imagine that this wouldn't happen with Israel or the United Kingdom or any other country. But for some reason, Ireland has definitely got overlooked in this respect.
You talk about the necessity of a minister for the diaspora. We were talking about it earlier on. What to perform what function?
Well, you know, when you're sending so many of your people away, I think it's about 400,000 now, and there are issues around immigration, there are issues around trade, there are certainly issues around the relationship. If you consider something like the Notre Dame football game in Ireland, where you have 20,000 Irish-Americans to come in, the man who set that up is a guy called Don Keogh, a former chairman of Coca-Cola. And you have guys like Chuck Feeney, who has put $1.5 billion into Ireland in education. Where is the next generation of Chuck Feeneys and Don Keogh, both of whom are in their 80s now? Who is doing what to uncover who these people are? Is it surely not the responsibility of a government to go out there and find out who these next generation of Irish-American business leaders are and to show the proper commitment to that by appointing someone who would have as a full-time job encountering on the business level, on the community level, on the immigration level, on all kinds of level, you know, the fact is that Ireland is a diaspora country. I'd recommend people read the op-ed piece in the New York Times today on Israel and its diaspora, which is fascinating, where they're constantly and completely in touch with their diaspora in many countries, getting their feedback, getting their input. And I just pointed Notre Dame game where the diaspora suddenly said, this is what we can do, or pointed a gathering where the Irish government did come out aggressively and say, yes, come back to Ireland, and the extraordinary impact of that. Mm. And that impact has apparently held up this year. So from that point of view, I think it's a hugely important relationship, and I think it's well worth a minister.
Yeah, actually, when you talk about the Israelis, I gather they do very clever things as well, that if somebody is a Jewish family somewhere in the States or wherever, and they're second or third generation, they bring the youngsters out to Israel at a critical developmental time in their life, maybe around the age of 15 or maybe around the age of 17, to get them embedded in that again. And it works for them on a business level as well as on a cultural level. What would you think of that idea?
Yeah, in fact,
I would remain to be convinced about the necessity for a minister as such, because what Neil has outlined there is surely the job of work of Irish embassies and consulates around the world. So,
yes, but if you look at your strategy, you're running a 1920s embassy and consulate situation. You have 20 full-time diplomats in the United States, your most important diaspora market. You probably have a few hundred scattered around Europe. You don't have the manpower. If you look at the British consulate in New York, there are 150 people there. If you look at the British Embassy in Washington, there are 750 people there. I mean, this is just a reality. Ireland is not putting the resources into creating the openings in the diaspora that are there.
Well, you know,
to say that 20 diplomats, who are all very good, by the way, and very, very stretched when you look at what they're trying to do this weekend, for instance, it's not fair to expect them to absorb these huge issues which need far more. The fact that you don't have people in Texas, you don't have people in Southern California, you've nobody in Silicon Valley. I mean, this is a reality. This is about resources. What do you want to commit to the diaspora? I think guys like Chuck Feeney, Don Keogh have shown what can be done, the game with Notre Dame, the gathering, all these things. And you're expecting a handful of diplomats to take on a continent and a country of 300 million people.
Gemma, you wanted to come in?
Well, I just... If you create another ministry, you have a constitutional problem because you can only have 15 ministers. And what one are you going to abolish to create this new one? I'd be worried about that. But I do think that at junior minister level, somebody with specific responsibility in this area would be a good idea.
The French have a full minister.
I was just about to say that the President Hollande had. I met with Hélène Conroy as well, and she has... urged Gilmore to set one up with a Minister of State with responsibility for this area. And especially for people, a friend of mine got her UK driving licence yesterday, and we all felt this sadness of, does that mean that you're not coming back? And I think with people in their 20s and the idea of their friends probably not coming back, but the idea to keep their Irishness, to keep the idea that they are actually Irish, and when they do make it, as most of them, as a lot of them will, that they will come back or become philanthropists like the Chuck Feeneys have.
Right, yeah. There's an awful lot of sadness associated with it. Yes, Larry?
No, I just wanted to say, to be fair, I mean, there's one Irish politician, Senator Mark Daly, who, in fairness to him, has dedicated a tremendous amount of time to the diaspora and diaspora issues and has almost become like a fixture in Capitol Hill, lobbying specifically on behalf of the undocumented Irish. So I think there's will there. I think Neil's suggestion is a good one. I think it's emblematic of the government putting its money where its mouth is when it comes to the diaspora.
Okay, we will leave it there for the moment. Neil, as always, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme, and we'll take a break.